Generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coastside, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
It's summer on the coast, and you know what that means. No, not more fog. It means Ruben is on vacation, and it's time for the Summer Mike Series. Here's your host for the Summer Mike Series, Crystalyn.
Thank you for joining us on this another foggy Friday in Half Moon Bay and across the coast. I'm here with my good friend Ranger, and he's in for a three-peat, so thank you very much, Ranger. And if you want to call in and talk to us, the number is 650-560-9851. 650-560-9851. Good morning, Ranger. How are you?
Good morning, Crystal. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me again for the third time in, what, 6-7 months?
Yeah.
And you know, just sharing the waves.
Yeah. I think some fun and exciting stuff has happened in the last 6 months since you were with us last. One of those being, you are now my teammate.
I am. I'm working as one of your underlings, as I say. No one else does.
How dare you, sir?
Silly to say it like that. But no, yeah, I'm over at the Coastside Chamber of Commerce in the Visitor Center, just kind of helping remind people that Half Moon Bay is here, telling them all about the cool, crazy, fun, exciting things that we got going on, and honestly taking some stuff off of Crystalyn's plate so that hopefully she can actually get some shred of sleep at night.
What? Sleep is overrated. And not needed at all for our health and
Never.
Mental well-being. Well, yeah, thank you for joining the team. And so for those of you who are not aware, the chamber has long run the visitor center for the area. We've been working on it for over a year, but we became a official visitor center of Visit California, which is really cool. It's a designation that not all visitor centers have. And so Ranger came on and he's been helping get our visitor center redone and like lots of cool new decorations and working with Visit California to help get those midweek visitors. And then we're also working on a visitor study. So for a lot of the stuff that we do, everything was anecdotal. And now we're actually going to have real data. And so what has been an interesting thing that you've noticed from the visitor survey?
Yeah, so something I've been telling the visitor surveyors as we are doing the interviews or when they're, you know, signing up to do it is we've had a lot of anecdotal information about people, you know, going to the beach and then leaving. And now we have data to show that people go to the beach and then kind of just leave. What I have noticed, which is interesting, is for the major beaches, it seems like a lot of them are there for a few hours and they leave, of course. And then if they're already in downtown or in the harbor, they've already gone to other areas or they're more aware. Something that I've also heard from a few of the visitor surveyors, and I know that I think you've heard it, I've heard it, is people say, oh, Half Moon Bay is great. Your downtown's a little bit small. I mean, all you really have in your downtown is Safeway. And then it's kind of like, wait a second, no, you were in the wrong spot. So it's also just kind of like, okay, knowing where to focus our efforts on education and letting people know, hey, downtown is over here. We have all these amazing shops and galleries and coffee shops and restaurants. So I think that's going to be a big push, especially for those midweek folks coming over the hill, going to get dinner or doing a quick little date night or something, I think will be useful.
Yeah. So lots of good, fun stuff coming out of the data for the visitor center. And I personally think this is so exciting. How many in-person surveys have we had so far?
We are just shy of 800 surveys.
Is that insane, people? That's insane. 800. Usually, like, any organization out there that is doing a project and has to do a survey, it's, like, so hard to get even 30 surveys.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they're online, and people get to do it from the comfort of their own home. So, yeah, huge shout-out to the volunteers who are going out and getting the surveys for us.
Yeah, no, they're amazing. They're thorough. Like, it's also... It's interesting to me how open people are to having the surveys done.
Mm-hmm.
I think that also just kind of says like the kind of people that we are, I guess, inviting to the coast. Not inviting, but you know what I mean? Like the people that we attract to the coast.
Yeah.
Like the more chill, willing to talk, open. So I think that's really interesting to see as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a really cool process. So at the end of this year, we'll be able to publish a report that gives a comprehensive view of what our visitors are so that we can better communicate with them the different areas that we hope that they, you know, spend money to boost our economy, and then also where to put signage to let them know about the different areas on the coast, and where to put signage about being clean and mm-hmm. cleaning up after yourselves. Don't leave the beach dirtier than when you found it, and all of those things. So that'll be a part of our signage project as well, is sustainability and eco-focused and working with Sea Hugger and mm-hmm. You know, different organizations like that. So that'll be our next step. So yeah,
that nice little holistic approach to all the different orgs and stakeholders in terms of keeping the coastside pretty and beautiful and welcoming to folks. So
yeah. So that's a really fun project. And I really am thankful to Ranger for coming on and immediately hopping on all of these projects that were in the beginning stages and carrying them through. And then another cool thing, since you've started with us, is that you moved here.
Mm-hmm.
So you are now officially a Coastsider. So like, what fun. Now the cool thing is you come from a agricultural kind of town
mm-hmm.
from when you were growing up. So like, what fun things have you been working on here?
Yeah, so I grew up in further Northern California, kind of by Reno in Plumas Sierra County. And the thing, so on the ag side, it's a lot more of a cattle and ranching community. So it's kind of like, it's hilly, flat rangeland kind of. So I think when you see it for the first time, it's beautiful and it's very interesting, but living in it, it does get a little bit boring. And then you learn more and it's like, oh, okay, that's why this is the way it is, right? With all the cows and the sheep and the goats. And what's really interesting about over here is we have a lot of specialty crops on the coast side, the greenhouses, artichokes, mushrooms, brassia, like a whole lot of other
wasabi.
Yeah. So just like all these other really cool things that you can't really grow just because of the temperate zone that we're in further Northern California. And in terms of what was your original question before I started talking about farming?
What cool things are you working on here? Like, you got to go, the Chamber did Farms, Fish and Flowers, which was really, really fun. And, for me, it was fun to send you out as a docent, knowing that you love agricultural and the farming stuff. So like, you know, how fun was it to go see those different farms, and how have those influenced you over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah. So before I did my walk across America last year, March through August, coming up on the 1 year anniversary. And before that, I was working as a pesticide use enforcement inspector in Stanislaus County. So super deep in ag on the enforcement side. And once I did the walk, I was doing other things, focusing on the coaching and consulting side of my business. And it kind of like pulled me away from it. And then when I got over here into San Mateo County, when I was living in San Carlos for a few months, again, focus on the coaching and consulting, not doing anything with farming and ag. And it's kind of like I had so many things going on that I kind of forgot about how cool everything is. So when we did Farm, Fish and Flowers, and Krislyn, specifically chose the cool ones to go to.
Okay, no, they're all
not cool. Some of the really cool ones, the ones that she thought that I would resonate with the most, I'll say
yes.
It that way.
There we go.
It was just like this really cool moment of like, oh, this really is fun. This is beautiful. This is really interesting to me. And I think it was when we were on our way to the second farm, Twisted Fields. We went to Blue House Farms first, and they had the strawberry you pick. And
yeah, shout out to Ryan.
Yeah. And just like the whole barn, and you know, they have areas for the farm workers to live. It was just like this really cool little ecosystem. And then on our way to the second farm, my fiance was with me and she was asking like, oh, like, do you think that you want to do your own farm one day? And I'm like, you know, I don't know. Like, I think it'd be cool to have something where it's like sustainability focused and regenerative, but also like a learning and like a research farm. And then in the first few seconds, Katie Bradford, our tour guide at Twisted Fields, was like, yeah, this is Twisted Fields. Like, we're like a learning and research farm with, I guess, sustainability and regenerative focus. I'm like, oh, my gosh, it already exists. It is a possibility. So in the last, like, what, two, like month or so? Has it already been a month? Three, four weeks?
3 weeks, yeah.
Yeah. I've been kind of re-throwing myself into everything. Just, you know, looking at different programs to do, little courses to get back into it and just really trying to, I don't know, find a plot of dirt and soil that I can put stuff in. One of my buddies down the street, who also just moved to the coast side, we have a few little half wine barrels that we put some plants in. So now we're like, cool, we're farmers now. Very, very, very small scale.
I saw this article about somebody who was turning people's unused front yards in kind of more condensed populated areas in Los Angeles. So it was like, you know, a neighborhood in the middle of like Compton or one of those areas where they're considered food deserts. So they were, if somebody's front yard, was not really, you know, done up and being used, they were working with them to turn them into little farms, and it was really cool. And there was a gentleman who started a nonprofit to help them, and he helped, so then he, I think, teaches them how to manage it, and then, you know, goes and does rounds to make sure that everything is like hunky dory and all that. Yeah. But there's so such cool things about ag that it's cool to see that there's, it's unfortunate that there's ebbs and flows of people appreciating where our food comes from, and then that kind of, you know, drops off and everybody has an extra hard time, and then something will happen that kind of reignites people's interest in, oh gosh, somebody has to grow our food.
Yeah. Well, I think
food is not made by AI and machines.
It doesn't just show up in the grocery store, which is
unlike what Star Trek would have you believe.
Exactly. And I think that's also just like, I think a lot of that is just how society goes, right? Like, the whole point is we establish, like, I don't know, like, Ranger's history lesson of like hunters and gatherers to agriculture. And now we can focus on all these other cool things like being on the radio. We're not out there in the fields every day, right? So it's like, it totally makes sense why people are so disconnected. But I think just kind of being aware of like, it's not just like ag that we're disconnected from, like even like garbage pickups or like these like very infrastructural, jobs and industries that we do take for granted. It's almost like the most important jobs are the ones that when done, you don't notice that they've been done until they're not being done.
Yeah.
Then you're like, oh, that's a thing.
Oh, yeah. I don't necessarily want to put the trash in my car to bring it to the dump.
Yeah, exactly.
Every week or however often.
Yeah, so it just makes you appreciate like the people that are out there doing those jobs and having everything fleshed out so that we can focus on, you know, going to the beach and having a good time and going to a nice restaurant or even just sitting at home watching TV or hanging out with the cat. So I just think it's so interesting.
Yeah, it's super cool. And that's one of the reasons that my predecessor, Charisse, when they started Farm Fish and Flowers, it had a different name because there was more flower farms on the coast side. So it was called Tour de Fleurs. And so, but that was one of the reasons that they started it, was they really were seeing already back then in the 90s, you know, a decline in people having an understanding of where their food comes from and where our area in particular plays a part, right? Because there's like us as an agricultural hub, and then you've got Watsonville and Salinas as agricultural hubs, and then other places throughout California, but they are shrinking. They are shrinking significantly. And so even with the protected lands, or now they have rules that, you know, farmland is protected and can't, for the most part, be developed for larger things, but it's still so hard to be a farmer, and it's just like an insane job, and one bad day can wipe out an entire crop.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a quarter of your year's yield, and then you, now you have to figure out how to make it up and all these things. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely not for the faint of heart to become a farmer.
Yeah. And I think that's also just another, you know, things that people need to be aware of, or how, you know, even a unexpected frost or higher temperature or a small flood or a big flood, right? So it's just, it's a very sensitive system, but also at the same time very hardy because of the people that are boots on the ground doing that work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, super cool. So if anybody's, we do the Farm Fish and Flowers the last Saturday or the fourth Saturday in July every year. So if anybody's interested in seeing how our local farmers do it, that mm-hmm. is always an option. Yeah, it's very cool. The more I get to learn from farmers, the more, well, and I say this and I don't mean, like, I never disrespected, you know, where our food came from, but I was one of those people who I mm-hmm. don't think about it. I'm not a cook. I don't like cooking. I'm not in the kitchen. So I'm not, you know, dealing with the food on a daily basis to even really consider it, where it's coming from. And so when I took this job and I got to be a part of Farm Fish and Flowers, it was like really, really eye-opening those first couple of years. Just hearing straight from the farmers, like, how expensive it is to have a tractor. And, yeah. You know, Ryan from Blue House Farm was saying that there was like one particular tractor that he needed for one particular function, and like the only place to get it was Italy. Mm-hmm. It was just like, you couldn't even get something like that here. So then not only was the cost of the tractor X amount of crazy money, and then to get it here from Italy, and then every time it needs parts, mm-hmm. he's got to go back to Italy to get them. And then we had another farmer from Cabrillo Farms where the tractor machinery that he needed for his Brussels sprouts didn't even exist. So he just made it. Mm. He just made a big tractor to help make the Brussels sprout picking a little less tedious. Mm-hmm. And it still had to be run by people. I just want to put out there, it was not like an attempt to oust anybody from their jobs. It was literally to try to just like save their backs and mm-hmm. try to make it a little bit easier. So they have to be, I mean, I don't know if people really go into it thinking like, I want to grow potatoes and I want to know everything about the potato, but now I need to know everything about the tractors and everything about the weather.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. I think that also just goes into like every other industry. Like people are like, oh, you know, I've been plumbing for all this time. I want to start my own plumbing business. And it's like, yeah, you know everything about plumbing, but like now you need to know about payroll and expenses and taxes and licenses and this and that. And it's the same thing with farming and growing. It's not just, you know, like you said, putting potato in ground, getting more potato. It's now I got to fix this. And now I'm a mechanic and now I'm a this and now I'm a that. And it's just like, so there's so many different things that you have to do once you go into that career field. And it's like with Katie, she owns Rotate 8, which is it's super cool. She's making affordable, repairable farming equipment over at Twisted Fields. And I'm going to interview her on Monday. So I'll know a lot more after that, I'm sure. But there's like the whole right to repair movement in the farming industry. And I'm still learning. I'm not the resident expert by any means. But it's that same thing of like people need to be able to work on their own equipment. Otherwise, they have to wait for a deer rep to come out and fix their machinery. And that's going to be expensive and it's going to take forever, or they have to get parts imported. Mm-hmm. So it's like for these smaller guys, like I think what Ryan had said was the equipment in the U.S. is much on a bigger scale. And what would we say, France?
Italy, I think it was Italy.
Italy. I don't know the difference.
that's why he reps Half Moon Bay people. We keep it real small, real local.
Yeah. I know this area very well. But it's just like, you can't repair things on your own because you're either not allowed to or it's too complicated. So that's really what like people like Katie are trying to do, is make it more approachable and possible to do that. So one of my favorite things, like every time there's a problem, there's someone with a solution. I just think that's super rad.
Yeah, that's actually very kind of a common thing that you hear at car shows and car guys and stuff like that. Like part of the reason why, I mean, the, you know, 1970s and before and I guess 80s for a certain extent, muscle cars and things are really cool to a degree just in their look and the, you know, of them and all that. But one of the things that the mechanics love is the fact that they can work on them. Because if you, I'm sure if somebody lifted the hood of my Bronco right now, it's like unless you've been so specifically trained on those Ford motors because they're so computerized, it's not so much turning wrenches as it is on the older vehicles. It's like we've overcomplicated vehicles, and I'm sure that it's very similar with the tractors.
Yeah, and there's, again, I wish I listened to a few more podcasts last night about the whole right to repair, because I think that's like the other side on the manufacturer side is they're like, these are so complicated that if you mess something up, it could be dangerous. Mm-hmm. And it's just, again, you said so computerized and GPS and this and that. So
and some of them, some of those companies do it on purpose, right? So that's why like Apple was forced into making all their USB or all of their charging ports that they solely have to move them over to USB-C. And then along with the other manufacturers and things like that, because they would specifically change the cords so that you were constantly having to buy new cords and, you know, all of these things, which also goes back to the right to repair. Like, we have a right to want to upgrade our machinery or our phones or whatever, laptops and whatever, and not necessarily have to buy another $2,000 worth of accessories just because you wanted to change a port. And things like that. So
yeah,
people stand up for their your right to fix or repair.
There's a thing like that going on in video games right now too, with like downloadable games. I guess they're making some people are like taking the games off, even if they're not anything necessarily wrong with it, but they just don't want to support it or their license went up. So like, there's like a whole lot of across industries from, I don't know, video games to the McDonald's ice cream machines to tractors and like iPhones, right? And it's just so funny to like, not funny, haha, funny like that's in like
wild.
The deeper you get into things, it's like, wow, there's so much here.
Yes, there is. Yeah, I feel like there's no subject that is just surface level, no matter how much we may think it's surface level. Like there's, that's kind of the cool thing about people in general, like what makes different individuals tick, and like the things that I get super hyper about are not necessarily the things that you get hyper about, but then vice versa. And then so, and then we've got our third teammate, Abby. Shout out to Abby.
Abby's the best.
Abby's awesome. So we get into these like really cool discussions because we're, I think all three of us are pretty into how and why people think and do the things that they do, and like what's the motivation, and trying to understand people on a deeper level. And it's just really cool to see what sets people on fire about different things, and then, you know, what they want to like get out their pitchfork for, like, like, I want to be able to fix my own tractor.
Yeah.
Ah! Like, it's so, it's just very cool that people get so geeked up on that.
Yeah. And just remember, like, everybody has a motivation. They have a reason why they are doing certain things. And yeah, like you said, like, trying to understand, like, okay, this person is reacting this way. There's a reason for it. Understandable. What can we actually do about it?
Yeah.
I think that's another.
And finding, yep, and finding that happy middle, right? Because it's like the people who make the tractor have the reason why they made it that way, and maybe it made it more complicated, but maybe on the manufacturing of the tractor, it actually made it easier or gave it some new feature that it didn't have, right? So they've got their reason for why they made it the way they made it, when they're not, you know, being jerky about it. And then our dear farmer that actually needs to be the one using the tractor and not being held at bay when something needs to be fixed. So then they get all passionate about wanting their equipment to work and all that. And, you know, having those two come together and find some happy medium is really cool. So I'm excited to listen to. And what podcast is that?
It's the Foggy Farmer podcast on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else. The trailer's out right now. And then, yeah, I'm recording my episode with Katie on Monday. And then I have a couple other ones scheduled, so they'll be dripping out more consistently as time goes on. But the Foggy Farmer, super cute name. I thought it was clever. Again,
that's, and you came up with that in the podcasting class, right?
Yeah.
Or did you have that name
before? I had it picked out. I had things. So when I did the first podcasting class, I had the general idea for it. And this was way before Farm, Fish, and Flowers. It was just like an easy, like,
All things lead back to Farm, Fish, and Flowers.
Everything leads back to Farm, Fish, and Flowers.
Yes,
so
always.
The Foggy Farmer podcast, listen to it, hear from the people you will see at Farm, Fish, and Flowers, and then go and experience the farm. Because it's one thing to listen to the interviews of the people doing the stuff, but then to actually see it, it's like, oh my gosh, like, this is real. This is like a thing. I just think it's so, listening, experiencing, and seeing are all so different and unique.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Well, I'm super excited to hear that interview and hear more about what she's working on. And then and then Twisted Fields in general was also, working on lots of cool things. I think I saw on their website that they are working on collars for herds. So that they're easier to move from one.
Yeah, I think that was one of the projects. I don't think we focused on that one as much. Or maybe I was looking at the geese when she mentioned it. But, yeah, there's well, the owner, Daniel. One of his big things, I'm meeting with him also. But one of his big things is having it as a place for people to actually test and do research in the field. Mm-hmm. Rather than just, we're in the lab doing these things, and then we're going to bring it onto the field. And I listened to a podcast that Katie was on, and she was saying, like, oh, like, when you're working on these machinery in the field or in the barn, now you got to deal with mice getting into things. And you go, oh, I need to make sure that mice don't get here and chew this up, which you never would see in a nice, clean lab environment.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think, again, having, like, a research field where people can go out and test things in the elements without it being pristine and perfect is going to be more useful later on.
Because in case people didn't know, farms, dirty.
They're very dirty. but yeah, I think that's, and again, with the farming and ag, another thing that I've learned recently is a lot of research has been done to make farming and ag better, but it's either locked in behind paywalls or behind jargon and abbreviations.
Oh.
So the researchers, like, they're doing the work. They're like, okay, you know, carbon sequestration. How much carbon and organic matter are we putting back in the field? What's best for these plants? What's best for this? But, like, growers see that and they're like, what does any of this mean? And it's just, like, tied up in that jargon. So I'm also kind of curious, like, how much, like, AI or other tools can kind of help say, I'm going to upload this document. Tell me what this actually means and what I should specifically do.
Yeah, because I think there's also an issue feels like a strong word, but old school meeting new school, right? So you've got newer farmers that are using more tech and, let's just say, collars for helping the herd get from one field to the other. So there's less chances of stray cows going, you know, off to the wilderness. Old school farmers, don't necessarily, they're used to doing it the way that they're used to doing it. So they're not necessarily going to jump on and be like, well, now I'm just going to get all my cows collars because, you know, and they've got to figure out how to bridge that gap and find what's best for everybody. But there's just so many advancements on everything.
I know that the UC Cooperative Extensions, they're the ones that try to say, okay, this is the research. This is how you apply it. So, like, there's already a system to get that out. And then just kind of hoping that as other tech and other industry evolve, it's easier to go, okay, this is what we should be moving towards. These are the reasons why. This is what it'll affect later on.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we will be back after this break.
This is Community Radio for the Coastside. 100.9 KHMP. Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
This is Jay Michaels. Join me this morning at 10 o'clock right after Coastal Windage. I'll be along with Stan Warren Luttrell getting a check of your weather. Also, we'll take a look at today in history. And don't forget our forgotten find. All comes your way right after Coastal Windage on your Friday morning from 100.9 FM KHMB.
And we're back. If you want to call in and chat with myself and Ranger about farming or the coastside or anything that we might know about, 650-560-9851. 650-560-9851. So we're talking about farming and how very cool it is. So you had mentioned that you'd kind of, been focusing more on your business consulting and coaching type things, and mm-hmm. now you're kind of coming back to your love of ag. What has been like in the since you've kind of been reshifting your focus back to ag? What's kind of been the funnest thing that you've come across that you hadn't really had to deal with before, but now you're just like, ooh, that's super cool.
Like, do you mean kind of like the, now that more ag things have been going in, like what's been the most interesting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like what's captured your attention the most?
I think that, well, the first thing that comes to mind is the easy connection for me, at least, between people's real lives and farming and ag. I think a lot of, like, I was listening to this book called Dirt to Soil by Gabe Brown. And he's a farmer, I think, over on the East Coast, Midwest, Mid-East side of the country. Again, I'm
you're
not
looking
good at geography.
Like I'm going to know.
Like you're going to know how maps work. I should know how they work from last year. But one of his big things was just like, you know, there's these principles of soil science that you're supposed to treat the soil like it's like a living, breathing mm-hmm. thing because it is. Mm-hmm. And if you don't take care of your soil, everything else, like your crops won't be as good. Your animals won't be as healthy. It's going to just erode and leave. And then you're left with just kind of a Dust Bowl-esque field. And it kind of made me realize, like, I feel like that's the same thing with people, that if you're kind of doing this, like, churn and burn model of letting yourself get burnt out and not taking care of yourself and really focusing on regenerating and, mm-hmm. you know, not just in your own monoculture bubble, but, like, expanding out and having diverse experiences and having other people around, having a clear mission, vision, all these different things. That's what's going to add to your life more than just this conventional model of I'll just sleep when I die and I'm not going to do anything but this one area of my life. So that's been a really big thing that I've been doing, is kind of like revamping all of my life coaching program into being more around the what I call the growth framework, which is everything is just tied back to farming and ag. So that's what I've been really focusing on the last few weeks from my, you know, I have a 9 to 5 at the visitor and then 5 to 9, I go home and rewrite all of my programming.
I feel like that's how a lot of us are. Like there's mm-hmm. like a certain type of person that has that mindset where we're just constantly trying to make things better and more sustainable and mm-hmm. learning from what we had done. What worked, what didn't really work that led to burnout or whatever the things mm-hmm. are. So kudos to you for continuing to change things up and figure out what's working and what's not and how to keep people centered and finding their, that's really come up a lot. At some point, maybe I just want to do an episode on mental health because mm-hmm. so I've been having a lot of government meetings are like 6 and 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. until they end. And so it's like not uncommon for them to go until like 10 o'clock. And usually I'll go to the meeting at 10. I'm amped up from the meeting, so I can't fall asleep until like midnight, which for me is really late. Like if I can be in bed by like 9:30, like that's like the best. Mm-hmm. But that rarely happens. And then I'm back at work at 9 a.m. And then I'll do that for a couple of weeks, and then I'll feel completely, you know, depleted. Mm-hmm. And it looks like, oh, I think somebody was trying to call, but I think it might have been spam. So, like this week in particular, I've been not coming into the office until closer to 10 or 11, trying to offset my time because I felt like I was starting to go down the burnout route. And it's really hard. But I've noticed that a lot of people are starting to take that into consideration now, like feeling like, oh, I'm not just tired. Like I am, my soul is tired.
Mm-hmm.
From all of the things that we're doing. So with your coaching stuff, how, like, are you finding that there is more of a kind of shift towards people? It used to be that I feel like people would come to coaching because they're wanting to learn to manage their team better or wanting to learn. And it was like very work focused and like, how do I just get better at the thing?
Yeah.
And at least just in my general conversation, so I'm curious if you're finding this in your coaching conversations, if there's a shift in people being more like, how do I do better for my team by doing better on myself?
Yeah. And I think that to answer your question, yes. And what I've been noticing a lot more is like a lot of what my coaching focuses on, the way that I was certified, is it always goes back to what is important to you. Why do you want to do this? Why are we even talking about this? And I feel like you said, like a lot of people come to coaching because they want the why, like the how. How am I going to do this? How am I going to be better? How am I going to start a business? How am I going to have a better marriage? How am I going to have a better relationship with my kids? And they're focused on that how, the what. And then they get to coaching and I'm like, well, why is this even important? And it's like, what do you mean? Why is this important? Like, of course I want to be a better dad. Well, it's like, okay, well, what does a better dad look like? Like people, they have these, I call them bucket terms. Like, I want to be good. I want to be better. I want them to understand. And it's like, well, what does that word actually mean? Like right now you just have like an empty bucket of a word. Like you got to put meaning into that. And like, oh, okay, well, a good dad means someone that, you know, goes to their games or asks them how their day was. It's like, awesome. Are you doing those things? Oh, I guess not. Like, that's why I don't feel like I'm being good at this. So it's just really like clearly defining, okay, where do you actually want to go? Where are you now? Okay, now we can talk about what we're going to do to make that happen. Being a better boss, being a good communicator. It kind of just stems all down to filling up those buckets of what that actually means.
Yeah, I think a really cool thing that's happening in general is people understanding that self-awareness is important.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to be a little bit blunt. The number of people who do not have self-awareness is shockingly a lot. Mm-hmm. So they don't. And it's usually, I feel like, something... if somebody is not naturally self-aware, then something happens in their life that kind of shocks them and jars them into needing to be self-aware because finally something important is potentially at stake, whether it's their business or their marriage or their relationship or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, something is at stake. So then they take the time to do self-reflection. And... it's really a cool thing with the younger generations that they are taking those self-reflections on a lot sooner than people, and I'm going to say my age versus your age because I think I'm like 27 years older than you. So like my generation.
I'm like doing math in my head. I'm like, I don't think that's accurate, but okay. Pop off this, I guess.
And I know I just come across so youthful, but I'm really super old. But like my generation, like that was not a thing. Like, you know, nobody taught us in high school or college. And most, at least for me, like my parents are both super hard workers. So it's like work ethic was really important. Not letting people down was really important. Volunteering is really important. And all of these things that were like, do. And both my parents model that very well. But there just wasn't this like global understanding that you can only do so much before you start taking a toll on your body, whether it's a physical toll and running yourself physically into the ground, or a mental toll and you're mentally having issues. And so it's really cool that people are starting to really see and pay attention, and acknowledging that there is only 24 hours in a day. And not only do you, most people need to, should sleep 8 of those hours, but you can't necessarily fill the other 16 with go. You need some of those hours of just downtime or spending relaxing time with your loved ones or your kids or all of those things.
Exactly.
So with your coaching stuff, what is like your favorite thing that's come up where people are having realizations that they can change, that, you know, things can be different if they just take the time to have a little inward look-see?
Yeah, I think the first thing that came to mind for that, so I also do business consulting with the Renaissance Center, and I'm running a business class right now, business prep, and one of the students in it messaged me and said, hey, I know that I was doing business A, I don't know that I want to do that anymore, I want to switch to doing business B, here's a few reasons, is that allowed? And my response was like, what do you mean is that allowed? Of course that's allowed. Like, it's your life. And I think,
you have to be a checkerboard maker.
You have to be a checkerboard maker rather than a chessboard maker. I don't know. But it's just like so interesting. Like, I think one of the things I've noticed too is like people almost look for outward permission before they do inward change. And it's like, no, like you need to give yourself permission. Realizing, hey, this other thing does not align with my values or my personal mission or vision for my life as much as I wanted it to, and changing that every week because you think that you need to change something every week and it's fun and exciting. But like, you can't make those changes long term just because you realized this is what I want things to actually look like and be.
It's an interesting thing that I've noticed, both through myself and through other people, exactly to your point about needing outward permission. People, can we just give you blanket permission? You're allowed to be happy, and you're allowed to do what you want to do that leads to you being happy. So if that's changing your work situation, if that's changing your home situation, if that's changing where, like, your city situation, like, whatever it is, you're allowed to be happy. The number of people that seem to go through life not so happy because they feel like the situation that they're in is just like cemented. Like they just can't make those changes unless everybody else is on board with them making those changes. For me personally, that realization came when I worked at the Carmel Chamber. And I had a manager that was making projects I was working on unnecessarily difficult. So wanting to make changes to things for the sake of making changes, not because those changes did anything to better the project. They actually made the project slightly worse. And one day she was really just coming down on me in this like really condescending way. And she was turning a job that I loved into a job that I didn't like. And I literally looked at her in the face and said, I am the queen of my own castle, and I don't have to sit here and take this. And I walked out. And I thankfully didn't lose my job, but because that could have been a real outcome.
Yeah.
But I will, at least in that situation, she did treat me with more respect after that, because I basically told her in a not so nice way that she, you know, that just because she wanted to impose a will on me, like, I didn't have to sit there and take it. Just because you pay me doesn't mean I have to sit there and take it.
Mm-hmm.
I could choose not to be paid for this thing and walk away. And that was a big turning point for me, where it's like, I mean, I do my best to not run through life being a jerk, but but I will put my foot down if something is making me uncomfortable or making somebody else uncomfortable. Because we all have a right to be happy.
Mm-hmm. It's a heck of a day when you realize that you have free will.
Oh,
and it's amazing. Like, oh, you can just, like, do things and change things up. You can quit your job and walk across a continent.
Yes.
Or change your job or dye your hair or do these other things. So it's just like, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it, too, is, like, don't look at other people for permission. But you can look at other people for inspiration.
Yeah.
Because that's what I did with the walk. Like, I saw, oh, I can't do that because I'm poor and this and this and this. And then I saw other guys, and I want to say that they were poor, but like I was like, oh, I'm in that similar situation to them, and they still did this thing. Even maybe they're even, like, worse off in some cases than I am, and they still did it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's another thing, is that it's just like, people have had it worse than you, and they still made that change.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you have that potential to also do that.
Or somebody might, or you're the inspiration.
Or you're the inspiration,
right?
Exactly.
You don't necessarily have to be inspired by other people, but if you make changes, you can be the inspiration for somebody else to do it,
mm-hmm.
which is just as powerful.
For sure.
Yeah. So what was your biggest takeaway? And I know we've talked about the walk a little bit on the other times that you've been on with us. But now that you're, you know, hitting that year mark, like what have been some takeaways from doing the walk and all the, like, self-reflection time and meeting all these interesting people that, like, you might not have noticed or felt in the moment or directly after the walk, because you're still, like, on the high of the walk and, like, all that you accomplished. But, like, coming to a year out, like, have you had any realizations or, like, thought changes?
Yeah, I think that, well, one, the year anniversary of finishing the walk in Los Angeles is on August 31st, which is crazy.
Woo-hoo.
Like, I'm getting, like, the near the end of the walk memories on Facebook or Instagram. I'm like, man, I can't believe that was a year ago. I was telling Julie yesterday when we were on our way to Chipotle, I pulled up my Instagram and one of the posts was there. And I'm like, you know, it's crazy that I did that. She's like, what do you mean it's crazy you did that? I'm like, I feel almost disconnected from it now because it has been so long. I haven't walked 30 miles in a day in almost a year now. But I think that that's, like, one of the takeaways that I'm kind of seeing.
Wait, what if we made that, like, your, as the Visit Half Moon Bay coordinator, we're just going to send you walking across America again, but this time with a sign talking about how awesome Half Moon Bay is.
I had somebody ask me, they're like, would you ever do the walk again? And I'm like, for certain circumstances, yes. But my thing to them was like, yeah, only if Mr. Beast pays me to do it and I get to record it and, like, have, like, a whole thing.
Documentary.
An actual documentary, yeah, which I've applied for a few and I've gotten rejected. So any documentary makers, I have a lot of content. And I'm not afraid to grow out my beard again and walk in Alabama for a few miles. Not to do the full walk, but just for content. So that I think Julie's listening. I don't want her to think I'm going to leave again. But I think that that's one of the things, is that it's not just like, you can't just do something once and then ride that high for the rest of forever. Like, you still have to do things, right? Like, I can't just use the walk as my crowning achievement for the rest of forever. And I talk about it, like, my other podcast, The Never Peak Project. Like, mm-hmm. That is a big thing of it, is you can't just get to the crescendo, the top of one area, and just sit there. Like, you have to descend and start going up other mountains. And I think that's, like, a lot of what this is, like, right, with, like, the chamber work. Like, there's peaks to reach there. Same thing with coaching and working in farm and getting a plot and, like, doing all these other things. I think that when I started that podcast and when I was on the walk, that was just a concept in my mind. And now I'm kind of like, oh, okay. this is what it feels like to be moving towards something. I think there's also a difference in the types of goals. Mm-hmm. Like there's the, have I ever mentioned to you like the difference between like a finite and an infinite game?
Uh-uh.
Okay. So a finite game are games that have a clear beginning, a clear end, and specific rules. So like the Walk Across America, it was, I am starting in the Atlantic Ocean. I am finishing in the Pacific Ocean. I can't really just drive. I can't hitchhike. I am walking. There's a clear start, a clear finish, clear rules. Took 5.5 months to do it. And now an infinite game is a game that kind of has a clear beginning, but no real end, right? So like an example of that could be like marriage or your health. Like you're never going to take your spouse out on a date that's so good you never have to take them out on another date again. Or you're never going to eat a meal that's so healthy that you never have to eat another meal again. It's like continuous process over time. And like we were saying earlier, there's just some of us that are like really into the whole idea of like constant improvement. And that's kind of like what the game of entrepreneurship is like, of working for someone. Like you're constantly in it. And the only way that you win the game is by not giving up on the game, not quitting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like the most difficult mountain to climb because you're like, where even is the peak? And it's like there's like false peaks. Because I think that's another thing, like what life-changing opportunities come up every week.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we actually put our bandwidth and resources? So I think that that's just like a concept that I learned from other people that I had on the podcast during the walk. And now it's like, okay, this is what it really feels like.
Yeah. Well, and then there's also, I learned two kind of camps of people on how they feel accomplishment. So as somebody with ADHD, I have a hard time, and I from what I've read, this is a fairly common ADHD trait, is that I do not feel accomplished ever.
Mm.
When I finish something, I've in my mind, I've just finished it. It's just done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a thing to be checked off the list. I'm a big fan of ripping up Post-it notes and putting them in the recycle bin as my, like, this is done kind of earmark. It's very satisfying. But my brain does not have a thing where it goes like, woohoo, we could sit and take 5 hours and have a coffee and revel in the fact that we finished this project that we've been working on for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's done. And now my brain immediately, in the very next second, moves on to now this next project of the 17 projects you're working on has to get started. So, and then there's people, which blows my mind. 'Cause when you, you know, when you think a certain way or you have certain personality traits, it's very easy to forget that other people are different.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the fact that there's people who can like finish a project and be like, woohoo,
yeah,
and like ride out a feeling of accomplishment,
mm-hmm,
is a wild concept to me. Like, I do not understand it because I don't work
like
that.
I also have a hard time. Thankfully, Julie is very good about helping me celebrate.
So, like, I did like
the pesticide class with Job Train in July. And after that, she was like, okay, well, how are we going to celebrate? I'm like, I don't know, like try to do another one.
I don't know.
And she's like, let's go to Chipotle or something. Right. And I think that a lot of that too is like, I don't know if you feel this also, but it's like, I do so many things that like only 10% of them actually succeed.
Oh,
and then
or even get done.
Or even get done.
I have a personal hard time when people are like, oh, you've done so many things. And I'm like, I've literally accomplished less than 25% of what is in my head that needs to be accomplished.
Yeah.
So I can't, like, you're giving me this very sweet compliment, but I can't take that compliment in because in my mind, I am failing because I haven't done 1,000 more things.
Yeah. It's like, I have a solid D plus right now.
Yes.
And I don't know if I'm going to get to graduation. thanks, I guess. So it's
yeah.
I don't know. Cause yeah, I mean, like, I've been rejected from TED Talk, applications recently, or, speaking at conferences, or just other, like, RFPs that I've done. Mm-hmm. And it's like, the one that I get accepted for is like, oh, cool. Now what? Now, yeah. Like, when's the next shoe gonna drop? And I think that's like a constant feeling too. So it's just like that overachieving. I think other people have like described it that they feel like they don't want the applause because they feel like it was their job to achieve it anyway.
Yes.
And I don't personally feel like that, but I think that's another way that I've heard it described.
Yeah, that resonates with me a lot.
Okay.
Like with the chamber work, like mm-hmm. when people very sweetly give kudos on something that I've worked on chamber wise, it's like, awesome. Like, literally, that's my job.
Yeah.
Like, it is, like, I mean, I care. Caring is innate to me. That's, mm-hmm. you know, I don't consider that part of my job. But, like, yesterday somebody gave me a compliment about something that I had. They had come to one of our mixers and noticed mm-hmm. what a sweet rapport I had with multiple business owners. And, like, literally almost made me cry because I was just like, oh, thank you. But, like, literally, that's what I'm supposed to do. Like, that was a mixer. Like,
yeah.
They're supposed to come and ask me for things, and I help try to make those things happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really difficult when you have it's difficult, but it's also good because then we get all kinds of stuff done.
Yeah. It's like, we've definitely done more than the average bear, but we're also like, well, we should because I don't, you know, like what?
I don't know anything different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I sit on the couch to decompress and, you know, try to take some time for myself, like I was, you know, this week trying to be cool with myself because I felt myself getting too dilapidated. But then the whole time I'm sitting on the couch is like a Rolodex of projects going through my mind. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you're sitting here recouping, but you should be doing this and doing that, doing this and doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, it's the constant shoulds.
So going back to your walk and kind of thinking about the accomplishments and all of that, like, even though you wouldn't necessarily go to do the walk again, like, mm-hmm. is there anything that is on your horizon that you're just, like, really stoked on starting, or like you're starting to noodle it or consider?
Yeah, so the podcast projects that I'm doing right now are probably some of the biggest ones, especially the Foggy Farmer, just getting back into the ag industry, the Never Peak project, just kind of fleshing out the coaching programs. Something that I really would love to do is climb or hike Mount Whitney.
Ooh.
Which is the largest mountain in the continental U.S. like in the lower 48. Not, I think Alaska has a higher one. I don't know. But that's like one of the big things I would really love to do. And do that with a few friends, like either camp overnight or do it in one day. I think doing it over 2 days is easier and less worried about altitude sickness.
Ooh.
Also want to do a marathon. So like there's like other physical challenges that I want to do. But then also just kind of figure out the coaching and consulting and speaking and doing all these fun, infinite game kind of things with enough of those finite games of, again, climbing a mountain and going back down, finishing a race, right? So I think those are kind of the ones that kind of make that infinite game, easier and kind of give you those checkpoints along that way.
Oh, well, for the marathon, Senior Coastsiders is going to be doing mm-hmm. their annual, I think half marathon for Pumpkin Fest. Mm-hmm. So, you could do that. Sign up today. Well, thank you very much for coming on. And thank you for joining the Chamber team.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely have a lot of fun at the office. And with our dear sweet Abby.
Who's
also amazing. And so, yeah, thanks again for everything that you're doing. And super excited to listen to the Foggy Farmer podcast. And we will check you out. Anybody, please feel free to come by the Visitor Center, 637 Main Street, if you want to talk to us in person. And otherwise, I will be back next Friday. And have a wonderful week, Coastside.